Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Jackie Hendry, in today for Lori Walsh. Ruskin Park is near Forestburg. That's between Mitchell and Huron in eastern South Dakota. The park has existed since the late 1800s and over time became one of the major resort areas of the region. Not much remains of the park today, though, besides a historical marker, and even that wasn't there for a time. Joe Telestis is from Forestburg and became a bit of a Ruskin Park historian. He's here to tell us more for today's Images of the Past. Joe, welcome to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Jackie. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we chatted a bit last week. There are several chapters to this history of Ruskin Park. Let's start a little early on with something called a chautauqua. What is a chautauqua, and how does that phrase fit into the history of Ruskin Park?
Sure. Well, chautauqua, the chautauqua came from Chautauqua, New York, and what it was originally meant to as a training camp for Methodist Sunday school teachers, and later on it moved through the country and it kind of lost its religious connotations. But it acted as a kind of a traveling intellectual circus. It was a program of morality and inspiration and culture, with lectures and music and song and dramatic readings and oratory and novelty acts, and who knows what it would come through. And they were especially popular in rural parts of America because this was, you know, pre-radio, pre-mass communication and everything else. One of the owners of Ruskin Park, which was named, by the way, after John Ruskin, who was a noted poet and naturalist, and one of his fans was a guy by the name of Gus Rhody Jr., whose father, Hiram Augustus Rhody Sr., had opened this park on a very beautiful part of the James River, which, as people would come across the prairie, of course, there were treeless plains, and all of a sudden they got to this area, and there were ash trees and American elm trees, and he thought it would be a beautiful place to have a chautauqua. So they made arrangements and brought this chautauqua to this spot, this very bucolic, cool, shady spot with artesian wells and such. And people would get together once a year. The show would come to town. And it was like a 3 or 4 day affair. And what made Ruskin Park interesting is that people could stay there. After a while, they had built cabins. You could bring your tent. They had food available, all of these things. So you would come often over the 4th of July for 3 days or so, and there was all of this information and entertainment. And I like to think of it, as I said, as an intellectual circus would come to town.
I was just going to make a dumb joke. I think of myself as an intellectual circus sometimes, but... I mean, yeah, but pre-radio, pre-Netflix, pre-all these things, it's hard to imagine kind of a more all-inclusive entertainment venue coming to town, and there it is right there in Forestburg.
Well, and it came at a time after the railroad had come. Now, most of the towns in that area in San Bruno County, which, is, as you mentioned, is between Mitchell and Huron, if you're going that way, most of the towns have their centennial dates. As they were settled before the centennial dates were 1883, because that's when the Milwaukee Road Railroad came through. And as conditions in the East were getting worse, like in Chicago and various places with industrialization, and the air wasn't as clean as it used to be, and living conditions weren't as clean as they used to be, it was a real treat for people to come out to take the fresh air and the sparkling artesian well water. And for the people in the area there, you know, this was a chance to really get a picture of what was going on in the world, from everything from news to entertainment to philosophy to all of these different things. So it was very popular when it came, and it was one of those, you know, you think about, you know, prairie life for white settlers in South Dakota. It was a rare occurrence to have somebody come through with all of this knowledge of the world.
So all of that is happening late 1890s, early 1900s. I'm going to skip ahead a few more decades to the 1950s, because Ruskin Park from the Chautauqua now is a big scene for rock and roll in South Dakota. Tell us about that chapter.
The park went through a lot of changes. During the 20s, it had a golf course, a nine-hole golf course. It had a mile-banked racetrack, and it was thought to be one of the fastest dirt racetracks in America, where upwards of 2,000 people would come to the races. There were bands and a dance hall, which was very famous for its windows, which actually were glass, big, tall glass doors that the owners had gone down to St. Louis and purchased from the Lewis and Clark World's Fair, the exposition there. And they were very famous for what was called prism glass, of which I have some today amongst my collection, some of the glass from those windows. But it became a dance hall. It was very popular in the 30s and 40s with old-time bands and orchestra bands. And then, boom, all of a sudden in the 50s, it went through another change. And all of a sudden, it became a big home for rock and roll. And you had acts like the Everly Brothers and Jerry Lee Lewis, a very young Conway Twitty, and a real venue for local rock and roll bands in the 60s. And you'll still talk to people around the area who were kids, really, who were either attending dances and things there, or who played in some of the bands that played there. And it was part of a movement that was real popular at the time. There were many different venues, dance halls around that area, Milltown, and Lane, which is a little west of Forestburg, and various other places. But Ruskin Park was kind of the darling of the place, and it was a real meeting place and a real place for rock and roll. Those dances were on Thursdays, and then they had regular old-time, what they called old-time and new-time dances on Saturday nights.
And hard to understate the importance of this to the rock and roll scene in South Dakota, because Ruskin Park was the first place put in the South Dakota Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Is that right?
It was back in, I think it was 2010. I've become acquaintance and friend with a guy by the name of Don Fritz. And Don was the first executive director of the South Dakota Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And so he's a wonderful resource for things, because he has followed this stuff, you know, inside and out, and has quite a collection of recordings and especially posters, you know, dance posters from various places around. And in Don's opinion, he said that Ruskin Park was the best place. It was the kind of the one that everybody else looked to. And it's kind of funny, because, you know, you think about the size of it, it really wasn't that big of a place, but it had a reputation and it had kind of a central location. And a lot of people would love to come play there, because a lot of people would show up and have a dance. It also served, I think I told you this the other day, it also served as a place for the Tufts from Mitchell and from Huron to come and rumble outside. Because it was halfway in between both towns, and it was kind of neutral ground. And rumor also has it that if you knew the right person and knew the right person, you might be able to pick up a little area concocted moonshine that was there, which often was fuel for some of those rumbles.
So clearly this site, a key place for many scenes in South Dakota history. But as we mentioned in the intro, when it fell into decline, there wasn't much there but grass. Tell us about the small saga of putting historical markers at Ruskin Park.
Oh, well, yeah, the park in 1967, the Siegenthalers were the owners at the time, and Mrs. Siegenthaler's first name was Dagmar, booked a lot of the bands, and her husband had a heart attack, and he died, and they decided that it was time to sell the park. And the park was purchased by a pair of brothers who decided to use it as a cattle pasture. And, of course, when cattle get into anything, it starts to degrade the buildings and everything else there. Plus, there were a series of floods that would come through. You know, being on the river and being as it was part of the charm when you use the river to fish and swim and canoe and do all of those things. But it was also a detriment because when the river would flood, then, of course, the buildings would flood. After the park closed, there was an historical marker that was put up outside the park, and it mysteriously disappeared not that long after it was first put up. And rumor has it, because nobody knows for sure where it went, but rumor has it that a lot of people in those days wanted to kind of sneak into the park. And, of course, the owners of the park were running cattle. They didn't want people down there. And nobody knows for sure where the first marker went to. But maybe you can put two and two together. I'm not sure. That was just the rumor of the time. So later on, the sign was replaced, and it too disappeared, and nobody knows exactly why. Some say it was taken out when Highway 34 was made into a four-lane, but who knows? It could be in somebody's garage somewhere. You just don't know. And for years, there was nothing there to mark that the park had been there and been such a part of the social scene in the area. Then about, 6-7 years ago, Forsberg native, and of course, friend of mine and a friend of many, Vic Zimmerman, who's lived in Orange County, California for a long time, decided that it just wasn't right that there wasn't anything there. So he started what was, for its time, and certainly for the Forsberg area, a new thing, and decided to try to raise some money to have that marker replaced. And the Forsberg people, and Forsberg is a very little town. Today there's maybe 73 people there living in the town proper and people farming in the area. But like any small town, it's got roots all over the place. And Facebook brought them all together. And with $25 and $50 and $100 donations, the $2,350, I believe what it was raised. And there's a company in Wisconsin that does the casting. And we found the copy that was on the verbiage that was on the original sign in a book that was published here in Sioux Falls in 1974 with all of the markers at that time on there. And then added to the back was a list of the owners. We got a cast, and we had a dedication on the 4th of July. And so far, so good. The marker is still there, and people can pull across to right where the driveway entered into the park and find out more about the park.
My guest has been Joe Telustis, telling us about the history of Ruskin Park for this week's Images of the Past. Joe, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for sharing more about this very interesting site in South Dakota. Most of us never even heard of before. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you. And there's nothing there today, so don't go jumping over the fence and going down there, because everything's gone. Also want to thank Ken Stewart, who wrote a great history about it. Ken's an archivist at the State History Museum in Pierre. And Ken's a great guy. And I think it's online there is the history he put together, too. Very interesting. And thank you, Jackie. Thanks a lot.
You can read even more about Ruskin Park by visiting our website, sdpb.org/images of the past.